Welcome, everybody. I'm Stephanie Staples. Welcome to the CAPS 2014 Grow Your Business, Grow Your Life series. I am super pumped, excited, and honored to be on the phone with Dr. John DeMartini. If you were lucky enough to be able to see him at the GSS in Vancouver this year, you will know why I'm so excited. Let me tell you a little bit about him before we bring him on to talk to you live. He is a world-renowned human behavioral specialist and expert in leadership development. He's synthesized 41 years of research in over 260 disciplines, 260, disciplines such as physics, philosophy, psychology, neurology, physiology, metaphysics, just to name a few. Of course, he's doing keynote presentations, seminars. He has over 40 self-development books and an extensive library of CDs and DVDs covering topics from business to financial mastery, building teams and communication to activating leadership and greater productivity in all areas of life. He has inspired over a million people. He's shared the stage with Sir Richard Branson, Stephen Covey, Deepak Chopra, Donald Trump, and he's been interviewed by the world's leading media such as Larry King Live, Wall Street Journal, and O Magazine. And now he is here for us at CAPS, Grow Your Business, Grow Your Life. So thank you so much, Dr. DeMartini, for joining us. You are not close by now, are you?
No, I'm in South Africa, Johannesburg right now.
I was looking at your tour schedule, and it looks quite overwhelming and amazing. You are everywhere. Where aren't you?
Well, you know, my dream when I was 17, 18 years old was to travel the world and step foot in every country in the face of the earth. So I still haven't reached every country, so I'm still figured I better keep working.
Good for you. Good for you. Well, speaking of your dream when you were a child, I would love to sort of start the interview, if we may, by a little bit of history and, you know, where you came from, how all this came about. Because one thing, I don't remember every word you said during that very impassioned talk you gave at the GSS, but what I do remember is thinking, I have rarely seen somebody so passionate about their work. It was clear you could have gone, you know, for another 12 hours and been just as enthusiastic about it. So tell me a little bit about your history and your past.
Well, I guess I had the perfect void. When I was born, I had my hand and foot turned in, and I had to wear braces from up until I was 4 years old. And I think as a result of that, I had a desire to be free and not be constrained. And then in first grade, I was told by my first grade teacher in front of my parents that I would never be able to read or write or communicate, never amount to anything, never go very far in life. I had speech impediments and dyslexia and some learning problems. So I ended up making it through elementary school only by asking smart kids questions. But when my parents moved from Houston, Texas to Richmond, Texas, I didn't have a bunch of smart kids because we were in a low socioeconomic area. And I ended up dropping out and started hanging out in the streets and living on the streets and did what a lot of teens did in the 60s and eventually hitchhiked out to California and on to Hawaii to surf. I actually got to fly, obviously, to Hawaii, but I wanted to be a surf bum. And I was living in a tent by the time I was 15, 16, 17 in the North Shore of Oahu. And I was not taking care of myself, but I was surfing every day, and I ended up with strychnine poisoning and some toxic, I almost died, let's put it that way. And then as part of the recovery of that, I ended up serendipitously ending up in front of a gentleman who was speaking named Paul Bragg. And one night, with 1 hour, his one message was speaking to me and got to me. And that was the night that I thought, just maybe I could be intelligent. And I never thought I would be intelligent. I thought I would be working with my body and be in sports and things of that nature. But that night was the first time in my life that I actually believed that maybe I could be intelligent. And at the time, because of my youth, I thought intelligent people were teachers. So I had a dream that night because he told us that whatever we decided that night would be our destiny. And I had a dream that I would learn how to read and learn the laws of the universe, as he called them, and learn how to teach and travel the world and teach. So that was 42 years ago, and all I can say is that that's all I've ever wanted to do since.
Wow, that's
neurotic.
That's an amazing story. I don't believe we got to hear that part at the GSS, but I feel kind of privileged to be able to hear that. I'm curious, when you heard Paul Bragg, was that his one message, you could be intelligent, or was that your interpretation of that message?
No, it was his message was primarily related to health and well-being, but he just said that we had a body, we had a mind, and we had a soul, and the body must be guided by the mind, and the mind must be directed by the soul to maximize who we are, and that our potential is relatively infinite. We don't know what the limits of our potential are. And every year he used to do on his birthday amazing feats just to demonstrate possibilities. And that night, I guess because he was saying and talking about that, I just thought, wow, maybe I have a possibility of being intelligent in my life. And I guess when you've been told that you would never do that, and then when you finally meet somebody who believes you might, that it's a dream. I don't know how to describe it, but I had a dream that night to be an intelligent person that could read.
Wow, and now you're traveling, you're inspiring other people. Same thing. Was there a pivotal point in your career where it kind of went from, I mean, clearly you've exploded, right? Over a million people are hearing your message. It's huge. Was there a pivotal point for you, or pivotal decisions, pivotal things that happened throughout your business when you kind of went from moving academic to pushing it out in the world in a less typical way?
You know, the very first student I ever had, I left Hawaii. I flew back to California, hitchhiked back to Texas. I took a GED by guessing, and I passed.
Wow.
And then I took a college entrance exam. My parents encouraged me to do that, and I passed. I don't know how to describe it. But then I took my first English and history class, and I had a history professor, Dr. Baker, and I thought I was prepared for the test, the very first test I ever took in college, but I bombed it. I got a 27. I needed 72 to pass. I got a 27. I remember driving home. I had to pull off on the side of the road three times because I was crying so much, and I got home, and I curled up in a fetal position on the living room floor, and all I could do is, I was in a dark moment. I could not see my vision that I dreamed about. I couldn't see that I could be a teacher. All I could hear is my first grade teacher saying, I'll never read, write, communicate, never amount to thing, never go very far in life. And I was sitting there laying on the floor just having a real, cold moment. And my mom came home from shopping, and she saw me there, and she said, "Someone happened." I said, "I blew it. I bombed. I guess I'll never read or write or communicate, never amount to thing, never go very far in life." I apologized to her. And she looked at me, and she didn't know what to say at first, and then she finally put her hand on my shoulder, and she said, "Son, whether you become a great teacher and philosopher and travel the world like you dream, whether you return to Hawaii and ride big waves like you've done, or whether you return to the streets and panhandle as a bum like you've done, I just want to let you know that your father and I are going to love you no matter what." And in that moment, my hand went into a fist. I saw the vision I saw that night with Paul Bragg in my inner mind's eye. And I said to myself, I'm going to master this thing called reading. I'm going to master this thing called studying. I'm going to master this thing called teaching. And I'm going to do whatever it takes. I'm going to travel whatever distance. And I'm going to pay whatever price to give my service of love across this planet. And I'm not going to let anything on the face of the earth stop me, not even myself. I hugged my mom. I got myself in my room. And I got a dictionary out. And I started memorizing 30 words a day. And I just started increasing my vocabulary. I had to pronounce them, which was tedious. I had to learn how to use the words. But slowly but surely, I started passing school, and I started doing, and I was on fire. There was no stopping me. There was no turning back. And shortly after that, I had a guy who was seeing me sitting and meditating in the sun outside, who was a Persian man, come up to me and say, "Hey, can you teach me whatever you're doing?" And I had this Afro-American woman in the library see me do some yoga and ask me to teach her that. And then I had this German fellow come in and said, "Can you teach me whatever you're studying in math?" And slowly but surely, I started to have a little group. And I had about 17 students that first year. And by the time I went on to University of Houston, I used to, under the trees in the park area of the university, I used to gather between 125 to 150 students a day. They used to come and just ask questions. And whatever I was studying, whatever I was learning, I'd share. And then by the time I went on to professional school, I started teaching every day. And then it kept growing. It went all over the city and then the state and the nation. And now it's all over the world. I never stopped. I learned to play the flute by playing the flute.
Wow. Great story. Okay, so we're talking mostly to small business people, entrepreneurs, speakers, trainers, consultants. What do you see as the biggest block between those of us who are in our own place, we think we're pushing, we're doing all right, but wanting to get to the next level and sometimes feeling a little bit stuck?
Well,
what do you see as the biggest difference between the people who are rocking it and the people who are talking about rocking it?
Well, it may only be that, you know, I always say that if you stay with something long enough, eventually everybody dives out and you're at the top. You just keep going. I can't say that I have all the keys and the answers to that. All I know is that I just keep doing it. And I can say that I think there's a wisdom in finding out what's truly highest on your values. You know, I wrote a book called The Values Factor recently. And I hope everybody can get that because I really believe it will help them. But the values factor is basically identifying what's truly, truly most inspiring, most valuable, highest in priority, the numero uno, the absolute chief aim of what you really want to dedicate your life to and do. And access that. And I have a whole chapter on how to do that and with this 13-step process. And then make sure you prioritize your daily actions and concentrate your efforts on the highest priority things and learn the art of delegating lower priority things so you're not doing low priority things at lower self-worth. You're doing only the things that you can't wait to get up in the morning and do. When you can't wait to get up in the morning and do what you love doing, people can't wait to get your message. And so you have to get really clear about what you're dedicated to. What is that message and vision and mission that you want to dedicate your life to? Then you need to make sure that you overlap that and find out what the market's looking for. You know, without a market, there's no business. So you have to find out what, in word, whatever it is that inspires you in a wording that meets the needs of the greatest number of people. And so you have to find out what Google search says is really what everybody's looking for, and it's got to match yours. You can't just say, oh, I can do a talk on that. You have to find the one that you're inspired to give that you know will make the biggest difference in the greatest number of people. You have to feel that you have a calling for this planet to be of service and to share that message. And I think if you match those two up, you're an unstoppable thing. And if you just go out there and do it and keep mastering it and practicing and in between your performance, and, you know, I always say if you shoot the hoops like Michael Jordan, you end up a leader. If you dance like Michael Jackson, do that. If you keep practicing like Bruce Lee, you do that. There's no stopping somebody who's committed to something that's most meaningful.
Yes, that determination and tenacity is worth a lot, that's for sure. What kind of limiting beliefs and perceptions, I know you talk a lot about self-limiting beliefs, what kind of things do you see that are stopping people?
Well, anytime you set a goal that's not congruent and aligned with your highest values, you automatically set up what I call the ABCDs of negativity in yourself, which is internal anger and aggression and internal blame and feelings of betrayal and internal criticism and challenge and internal depression and despair, because you're not being you. And those symptoms are not bad things. They're feedback mechanisms to let you know that you're trying to be somebody you're not, and you're not being authentic, and you're not being integral. And they're letting you know to set goals that are integral. So really, there's nothing but feedback mechanisms inside our psyche to help us. And so if we're not inspired, somehow we're setting up the goals that aren't us. We're trying to be somebody else than who we are. And we're not here to envy or imitate anybody else. We're not here to live in the shadows of anybody else. We're here to be shining from within the truth of our own message in the world. And that finding what that is one of the keys, because that catapults you. There's a certain authenticity that people naturally are magnetically, charismatically attracted to. And finding that is what the Values Factor book's about, trying to help people with that, because that's the key. I don't need motivation. I don't need incentives. I don't need any of that in my life, not for 42 years. Finding out what that key is inspired from within. It's intrinsic. It's not an extrinsic gain.
Well, as I said at the beginning of the call, from watching you speak just for that short amount of time, it oozed from you that passion and commitment and desire to spread your message elsewhere. So I think those of us listening can only aspire to have a percentage of that going out to our audience. You emulate it very, very well.
Well, you know, I can't think of anything else I'd rather be doing than what I do. I'm just right now in this next hour, hopefully finishing up a new book for some corporations in Japan. And you know, I did a live program this morning, a webinar this morning. I got another gig this afternoon, evening. I just do it. You learn to play the flute by playing the flute. You just get out and do it. And sooner or later, you learn a few things along the way.
Yeah, you have more products and more seminars, and you have a plethora of offerings in many different ways that you repackage your work. What's your advice as far as creating content and packaging and product development?
Well, again, there's probably people more knowledgeable about me and all that, but I just keep sharing what's inspiring to me. I have 74 courses that I teach. And about 1,000 little talks I do. I've done, I don't know how many talks over the years, and I've reached way more than a million. We've reached way over a billion people now. So I just do it. I mean, we just in radio this week, we've reached almost 10 million. So we constantly are doing radio and television and newspapers and magazines and articles and anything and everything that is available with PR, media, communications, anything we do. And every topic that inspires me that I think can make a difference. I have a publicist. I have many publicists, but the publicist, what they do is they go in and look at what the biggest needs in the society are at the time. In South Africa, we may find right now we're dealing with energy levels. We're dealing with education. In New Zealand, we're dealing with issues of sports and incentives. In Australia, we're dealing with economics. Each place has got different, and my publicists are involved in keeping an eye on what's going on in the media. And then we basically do what we can to provide service and find solutions to these problems. And then I do presentations and trying to offer solutions to the public. And lo and behold, they come out and they come to the programs because of it. And then we usually have opportunities to communicate to corporations or governments or educational institutions or Lord knows who. I mean, maybe it could be sport teams. But we just try to find a way of serving the most amount of people. That's the constant focus.
So that's a great question for all of us to be asking ourselves. What is the need out there? How can we serve them? How can we craft our message to something that fits with the need of the public and the corporations out there that we want to talk to? Speaking of your public events, let's talk about you've got one coming up in Toronto.
I do. I have one coming up in Toronto. I think it's March 26th.
It is.
At the Park Hyatt there. I'm going to be doing a little talk for about 2 hours on how to transform stressings into blessings, how to take whatever is in the way in your perception and turn it on the way, and how to take anything that you think is obstructive and turn it into instructive, and how to be, instead of transforming, or how to transform basically being a victim of history into master of destiny. I'm a firm believer that it doesn't matter what happens to you. What matters is how you perceive it, what you decide to do with it, and how you act from it. So I'm going to show you the science of how to take anything that happens and turn it into something that catapults you with momentum. Because I think that's the key, is not letting things on the outside dictate your destiny. You have to have the voice and the vision on the inside more profound than all things on the outside if you want to master your life.
Amen to that. So if you are interested in checking out Dr. DeMartini's talk from Stressing to Blessing, go to his website, drdemartini.com, and there's an events category on the right-hand side of the page, and scroll down to a place near you if you might be in South Africa or you might be closer to Toronto, but there's something for everybody for sure on that page. Can you give us a little taste of some of the learnings or teachings that you would be doing during that workshop, Dr. DeMartini?
Yes, what I do is many people run a story and want to run their little story and play their little victim about how things aren't working or what's wrong or what's not, you know, how this person did this and they want to blame and this kind of things and give excuses. That's not how you power your life. The first thing to do is what specifically is right now in your perception you think is irritating you or in the way or blocking you. You first define it. Mm-hmm. And then you ask a simple question. Once you've determined what's highest on your value, the thing you can't wait to do, your chief aim or mission or the thing that you love doing, then ask the simple question, how specifically is what you're experiencing, how's it helping? And amazingly, when people ask a different set of questions, they get a different life. Because the quality of our life is based on the quality of the questions we ask. So if all of a sudden we take whatever we're experiencing, let's say we've just had a loss of a client, or let's say we've just had a setback financially, or just have somebody bitched at us, at our client, or maybe a spouse or something, how is it serving you? A master sees everything on the way. So I'm going to give them a new set of questions to ask themselves that they may never have asked before on how to transform all the things that they think are stressings and irritants and non-resilient factors, and how to find out how they can be used to the greatest power. Because I really believe that there's nothing on this planet that's mortal that you can experience in your mortal body that your immortal calling can't override and use to its advantage.
We are smart folks. We just have to, I think you're totally right about asking the maybe difficult, challenging, and thought-provoking questions. It's harder to do that. Sometimes we don't want to hear the answers, perhaps.
Well, that's exactly it. People sometimes would rather – I always say that the magnificence of your own life is far greater than any fantasies you impose on it. And as long as you're addicted to fantasies, you're going to create your life as a nightmare. You have to get real and grounded in who you really are inspired to be and get focused and prioritized and see everything on the way. When you do, nothing stops you.
You have an interesting program also I was noticing on your website called Where's My Billion? Identifying your hidden billion, which I thought might be of great interest to our specific group that's listening today.
Well, that program, I did a program last year with Richard Branson in South Africa. In fact, we just did another one about a week ago with Steve Wozniak here. But what we did is, that was the title. And I have a video, Where's My Billion, if they ever want to watch it. It's an absolutely amazing video. But what it is the basically is asking, where are your assets? So many people don't realize that whatever's highest on their value is where their assets are stored. So some people have a very high value on their beauty and their body and their fit and their exercising, and they have a body that could probably sell a billionaire. And then you got other people that are highly intelligent and intellectuals. I'm more into that category, kind of the type that likes to study and learn. So I store my heavy assets in intellectual property. And you got other people that are highly socialized, and they're very, very social connected. They know everybody. And they store amazing assets into their social connections. Other people are basically in their spiritual awareness. Others into their business savvy. Others into their family. Their children are so valuable, they wouldn't sell them for $1 billion. Others into their finances itself, the wealth building. That's their key focus. But whatever your highest value is, whatever your dominant thinking is and focus is, that's where you store your greatest assets. But you will not convert that into cash and money if you don't have a value on wealth and money. So what I do in Where's My Billion, and I expose them first and help them discover where they have $1 billion worth of assets stored. And it blows their mind. They never knew they had so much assets. But I show it where it is, and then I show them the six steps to wealth on how to transform your values in such a way that you can see opportunities, make decisions, and take actions towards wealth building. And I'm telling you, I've watched people just blow their minds on how fast their financial destiny changes once they know how to do this. And so that's a one-day course that I teach. It's a live presentation, Where's My Billion video, but it's a one-day course where I actually make people find where their $1 billion worth of assets are and show them how to convert it into cash and package it.
Very cool. Have you been able to, I'm going to guess the feedback that you get is pretty amazing. What type of success stories have you seen? Does it do any standout that you'd like to share?
Well, I got a guy, I just thought of it, you said that. There's a guy named Rowan who is in Australia that was really, he kept getting himself in debt. He kept having problems in finances. He literally took a risk with his parents' money, their life savings, to try to get out of his last debt. And they were, in a sense, I guess, crazy enough to give him the money, and he ended up blowing that. So now he was over $250,000 in debt. His parents are now up in age without any money, and his back's against the wall because he's, like, suicidal. And he ended up coming to an evening talk and then to the Breakthrough Experience program, which is where I help people break through whatever's stopping them. And then he ended up coming to the program, which is the precursor to Where's My Billion. So he had nothing to do but just do the work. So he basically sat down, and we basically outlined over 7 hours where his assets were. And he was mind blown. He had intellectual property. He had social connections. He had ideas. He had inspiration. We sat down and came up with a bunch of different things. But his biggest love was real estate, but that's where he'd lost all his money before. His love and his knowledge was mainly in that area. So we sat down and did that. Then we did the 6 steps to wealth, where we actually had him raise his value on building a business to serve great numbers of people, build and refining that business where it's maximizing profits, saving, investing, accumulating, and having a cause. And we had him do that, and it took him 3 months to do that exercise in total. He started it that day at the one-day program, but he then went on 3 months and continued it. That guy right now is in double-digit multi-millions with real estate developments with the top people now in Australia, and this is about 2.5 years. So I'm just telling you, this is what is possible when people recognize their assets that they're hiding from themselves. It's not missing. Can I share another story?
Sure, sure.
I was doing an interview in San Francisco. I was doing talks in San Francisco, and then I had the opportunity to do a particular radio show. But it was about an hour and a half away, and the guy said, I won't do it over the phone. You got to come live. So I had to get a limo at 6 or so, 7 in the morning, and drive an hour and a half to get down there for a 9 o'clock interview. Well, we get down to this place, and I couldn't believe it. It was a big warehouse. I didn't see any radio station, just a big warehouse there. I finally knock on the door, and he comes to the door, and he takes me through this warehouse that had 48 years worth of archived radio shows by the most amazing people on the planet, from the presidents to the greatest musicians, to the greatest actors, the top people in the world. And we went in there and did a one-hour live and then a one-hour pre-record duplicate. And at the end of my interviews, he said, Dr. DeMartini, I hope you don't mind or I hope you're not offended, but I would love to know if you'd like to donate money to our radio station to keep it alive. And I said, you're joking, aren't you? He said, no, we barely make it month to month. And I said, I'm astonished. He said, why is that? He said, I just walked through your archives. You have 48 years, 7 days a week of the most amazing recordings in the world. This building is worth probably $2 to $3 billion worth of assets. And you're basically asking for $5 and $10 donations. I mean, this is insane. He says, I don't understand. He looked at his wife. He says, I don't understand what you're talking about. I said, look, you have the Beatles from the 1960s interviews. You've got Nixon. You've got Mick Jagger. You've got the presidents. You've got celebrities. You've got everybody here interviewed. This is a gold mine. I said, if you were to package these things and sell these things, you'd have $2 billion sitting here. He couldn't understand it because his values were intellectual property and getting a message out socially. And he didn't realize that he had an asset sitting there. So I showed him how to convert those. And I got him. I gave him some leads on people that knew how to package and sell those things. Anyway, this man is now changing his destiny because what he's been doing is been sitting on his assets, but he never packaged them and presented them in a way that met the needs where they would turn into cash. And this is what most people are doing. They're sitting on $1 billion worth of assets, and they don't even know it.
Well, and I bet that's even more so true for our group that has a lot of intellectual property.
And, I believe that's true, and I think that the moment they do the exercise, they become awakened to it, and their life starts to change.
Can you give us some tips over the line that would give us a little bit of
direction? Absolutely. You first just ask the simple question, where's my assets? And you can't stop. The exercise in the program is you're not allowed to stop until it totals $1 billion. And people go, what? they laugh at it. They do just what you just did.
I'm laughing.
They did it. Let me give you another example of a woman that was in this Australia, another one. She came to my program called the Breakthrough Experience, and she said, you know, I'm a consultant. I do some part-time work for Boston Consulting Group and McKinsey Corporation. I would like to open up my own company someday. Anyway, at the end of the program, she decided, I'm gonna go further. So she took my leadership program, my 7-day program. At the end of that, she said, I'm done. I'm done working for somebody else. I'm on my own. So I want to be the leading Fortune 100 companies in Australia's lead consultant. I said, great. She said, what do I do? I said, make a list of the 100 names of all the top consultants. Then let's go and identify every trait and everything that these people dedicate their lives to and stand for. Then we're going to own those traits, and we're going to find out where you have all these traits, because nothing's missing in you except when you don't acknowledge them. And then she did Rupert Murdoch and Carrie Packer. They were the first two people. And Rupert had almost $18 billion at the time. So I had to ask her, so where's your $18 billion? And she goes, well, I have about I've got about $200,000 saved, and I got about this and that. I said, no, we got to dig deeper. And so she said, well, I don't know where I have that. I don't have that. I said, look again. And I said, where's your social contacts? Where's your network? She says, well, I've definitely made some contacts. And who do you know that could be heads of companies possibly, and they'd be worth millions of dollars to companies? She says, I got that. List them all. I said, where's your intellectual property? If you've consulted for companies, have you ever made a company a lot of money? Absolutely. Woodside Corporation went up $50 million because of my consulting. I said, good. Whatever those ideas are, that's worth $50 million. She goes, okay, I'm getting it. I said, what other ideas have you got that's made money for companies? Let's document them. Who else do you know in your network that you can find that basically has that's worth something? And then what knowledge do you have about finances that you could sell? And we sat there and started on a roll. It took her 3 months to find out where she had almost $18 billion worth of assets. But I'm telling you right now, when she finished, 37 of the Fortune 100 companies had her as the consultant within 3 years. 3 months got her to know the trade. 3 years later, she was consultant for 37 of the 100 companies.
It's thinking way bigger. If somebody asks me, I'm like, okay, I'll find my million. But I wouldn't even think to ask the question, where's my billion?
Well, I tell you what, we all have it. We just don't understand it. Let me give you another little example. I've developed a little tool on value determination and value applications. I incorporated it into a company in Japan. Actually, I did the breakthrough experience there, and a guy came from that and came to a training program I did, and he incorporated it, actually. Then he asked me to come in and help him with that incorporation. The company, he went in number one in the company. They have many offices. It's a big company all over the world. It's the biggest manufacturer of clothes. He went in there and became number one in his company, in his store. He then shared this idea with five other people. They become, literally in a matter of months, they became top producers. He then shared it with 15, and now 50 recently. And anyway, they ended up doing it. The consultant that was working there said, what the hell is going on? What is this tool? So I went and did a program to 80 different consultants recently in Japan, in Tokyo. They incorporated it. We're now doing a licensing. One of the companies signed up 1,000 people from Panasonic, and they're at $3,000 a pop, and I'm getting royalties out of there. Now, that's just one idea, one little tool that it could be worth little or a lot, depending on how you package it. But that's possibly worth $1 billion. That one tool is worth $1 billion around the world once it gets into the hands of all the corporations that we're going to get it to. So that's just one idea. And everybody who's a speaker's got them. They just aren't acknowledging and valuing themselves. And until you value yourself, don't expect the world to.
Right. And I think, maybe as a population, we do value ourselves perhaps more than the general public, but perhaps not to this level, right? It's a different shift of the mindset. And the money part, talking about the wealth is great. And I think so many of us, too, we realize the more money we have, the more good we can do, right? The more we can serve society at large. So what kind of mindset do you see of the people that are wealthiest, that are doing the best?
Well, there are six the things I mentioned earlier, the six steps to wealth, are things I found common to the wealthiest billionaires. I've interviewed about 26 billionaires now, and I can tell you there's some common threads to them, and these six things are there. So let me go over those six things.
Sure.
If I asked – I just did it this morning at my conference this morning that goes all over Africa. I asked people, name a billionaire. And almost every time I get the same names, they'll say Richard Branson, or they'll say Warren Buffett or whatever, or they'll say Bill Gates, or they'll say Sims, or they'll say, you know, these kind of people, or Gina Reinhardt in Australia. And I'll say, okay, great. Name one of them that hasn't built a business that serves ever greater numbers of people. And they can't think of any. Larry Ellison. And so the first one is that you have to have a cause, a drive, to want to go serve people. If you don't have a work ethic, this desire to go serve people, you don't have a source of income. And the greater the number of people you serve is the greater the source of income you have.
Mm-hmm.
So
uh-huh.
That's the first one. And so I tell people to sit down and write down 200 benefits of actually having that and doing that in their life. Because unless they stack up enough reasons for doing it, they're not going to do it. So
you're
I'm on a mission.
200 benefits.
200 benefits of actually building a business that serves ever greater numbers of people globally. If you don't, you can't make a difference in yourself until you have a vision as big as your family. You won't make a difference in your family until you have a vision as big as your city or community. You won't make a difference in your community and be later in a computer unless you have a vision as big as your city. You make a difference in your city unless you have a vision as big as your state. You won't be number one in the state unless you have a vision as big as a nation. And you're not going to be number one in the nation until you have a global vision. And you can't have a global impact until you have an astronomical vision. You have to expand that vision and give yourself permission to do something extraordinary on the planet if you want to play a bigger game. So you sit down and write down 200 benefits of building a business that serves vast numbers of people across this planet. And it can't be local.
Make sure I got straight. No global vision without an astronomical vision. Is that what you said?
Yep, that's exactly it. You need to take – in my office, there's pictures of globes. There's pictures of astronomy. There's maps of the world. There's maps of the heavens. There's clocks from every part of the world. I've always thought outside looking down on the earth. I learned from Rupert Murdoch when I went to dinner with him one time. He said, I asked him, how did he build his empire? He said, I hold a globe in my hand, I spin it around in my hand, and I say, what message do I want to bring to what country today?
Wow.
And you got to think outside the box. You got to think celestially, not terrestrial, if you want to make a big difference.
You know, I've been doing interviews for over 6 years, and I don't think I've ever said wow so much in an interview.
Okay, well, the second thing is you have to be dedicated to directly or indirectly, and so you need to write 200 benefits of directly or indirectly managing that business, polishing that business, refining that business until it is maximizing profits. Because if there's no profit, there's no income. So you got to maximize profit. You have to care enough about your employees to make their job so efficient that they're inspired to go to work to serve the people that you want to vastly serve. Mm-hmm. And if you do that and you prioritize with Parkinson's law and you delegate things that are to people who are congruent according to the values that they have, you're going to get more productivity. You're not going to be micromanaging. You're going to be let free and set free to go out and do what you're here to do, which is teach. And then the third thing is you have to be willing to save an ever-progressive portion of the profits. Because if people don't save, there's no capital, there's no cash flow. You have to save before you ever do anything else. And I always say that even Bill Gates, when he was the wealthiest man in the world the first time, $81 billion, he had $27 billion worth of liquid assets in cash reserves sitting in money markets at 5.5%. So here's a man that is smart enough to be precautious enough to make sure that no volatilities can interfere with his stability. So you have cash reserves. I keep about 3 years worth of cash reserves around, waiting for crisis in markets to be able to grab opportunities on. Then you need to basically master the art of investing. 200 benefits of saving, 200 benefits of investing. And you have to earn the right to risk. You can't go out and speculate before you know how to invest. So you start with the basics. You go to large cap stocks, you buy quality companies that know what the hell they're doing, and you buy real estate that's blue chip, that's quality, and you invest wisely, not gamble your money away, because foolish people throw their money away with impulses. You methodically master the art of making your money work for you. And then the next one is 200 benefits of accumulating wealth. If you don't have a reason for doing it, you won't. If all you do is need it for a little quick fix to go out and on vacation, buy some nice clothes, whatever, you got too small a life. You need a cause much bigger than a great life if you want to have an amazing life. And then the last one is 200 benefits of having a financial cause that leaves a legacy. But if you don't have I have in my book, my master plan book, a 1,000-year plan of what I want to accomplish on this planet. So you need to have a bigger plan so you look back at something that's a cause. Because the greater your cause, the greater your life, and the greater your wealth potential. So those are six things that 200 benefits of that make vast difference in finances. Because those are common to all the billionaires.
So what I see it's a huge investment in time and thought and effort into what we want in our future, right? We can just keep going through day to day and taking what comes and creating little things. But you're saying to go bigger, we need to think bigger, we need to think different. And when you tell me the list of 200 benefits, I'm thinking, oh my God. That, no wonder it's taking people 2 months to do this.
But listen, if you don't have a big enough reason for doing it, you're not going to do it. And if you don't have enough reasons to stack up 200 of them, you don't have much of a reason to go out and build a business. So you need to have a big enough – when the why is big enough, the hows will take care of themselves. You'll always come up with strategy when you have a big enough reason for doing something. So
And
it's not really that much. I don't think it's that much at all. I mean, I've had people go through all of that in less than a day. So
really?
It's not
really?
That much. Oh, yeah. So I've had people knock out 200 in 2 hours. So it's a matter of just focusing and getting attentive to it. That's why I put Where's My Billion program together. That was the purpose of it, to make sure that people took the time and got pushed to get it done so their life changed as efficiently as possible.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Okay, well, you know what, it's about 15 to the hour, and I'm going to, we have some folks on the line here. I'm going to ask if anybody has a question that you would like to ask Dr. Martini. You can raise your hand on the call, and we will ask them a question for you. If there's something you might like to ask, raise your hand. And if not, I'm going to keep on asking what's curious to me. So while we're waiting for the questions to come in, you also talked about activating mental genius.
Well, my first affirmation that I ever received from that man that night when I was 17, 18 years old, it was a week before my 18th birthday. He told me I told him, I had a dream to be a teacher, but I don't even know how to read. I've never read a book. I didn't read until I was 18. So I told him, I don't know how to read. I have learning problems, a speech impediment. I saw that I would be a teacher, so I don't know how I'm going to do that. What advice can you give me? He said, young man, every single day for the rest of your life, and I mean never miss a day, I want you to say to yourself, I'm a genius and I apply my wisdom. So I can tell you right now, for 42 years, I have not missed a day, because I believe a genius is one who listens to their inner voice and follows the inner vision of their soul and obeys. And I basically believe that we all have a genius. I'm involved in education here in South Africa and many other countries. And they gave me carte blanche to this country to help change the kids. We just had a 27% pass rate in Alexandra Township here in South Africa go to 97% in 1 year. It's a matric passing. It's high school passing because of this principle. What we did is we identified what was highest on the children's values. We found out what the highest values of the teachers were. We then linked the curriculums to the teachers' values and to the students' values. And then we link the teachers' and the students' values together. This takes about 4 hours, maybe 4.5 to 5 hours max. And immediately these kids change in their ability to grasp information, desire to learn. Their attention deficit labels and disobedient, defiant labels all disappear. They get focused, and the teachers are more inspired, the kids are more inspired, and they take off. So there's no way you convince me you can't do something with children's genius. It's natural for them to want to learn. It's just a matter of accessing and linking what they're learning to their highest values, because they spontaneously love learning what's important to them. You just got to link the curriculums to it.
Cool. Yeah, I'm curious, were you ever able to reconnect with Paul Bragg and let him know how he changed your life?
You know, I never got to see Paul Bragg. Well, that first night I met him, and then for 3 weeks I studied with him, because he told us that he was doing classes for 3 weeks. I was hitchhiking every morning to meet with him. And then he went on to California. I never saw him again in my life. But I'm very close friends with his daughter, Patricia Bragg. I just saw her in Hawaii a few weeks ago, and she was there. And you know, one of the most honoring speeches I ever got to do, I was in Hawaii. This is about 6 years ago, and the back of the room at my program, The Breakthrough Experience, in walks this short little lady. I think she's about 4'6", and with this hat and this pink outfit on, and she walks in, and I went, oh, my God, it's Patricia Bragg. And at my break, she came running up to me. She grabbed my hand. She looked up to me with that little hat on, big smile, and she had a tear in her eye. And she said, you remind me of my father. And I said, wow. I said, he's the one that inspired my life. He said, well, you remind me of him. You're so dedicated to what you're doing, and that's how he was with his mission. And Paul Bragg initiated 1,000 health food stores in America. Henry Kellogg with Kellogg's Corn Flakes Company was initiated by him, inspired by him. Jack Lane was inspired by him. Donald Trump was inspired by him. Steve Jobs inspired him. Gloria Swanson, Luther Burbank. Over 150 major, amazing people in their lives all got inspired by this guy. So I was one of those people. So, yeah, I didn't get to see him again, but I got definitely friends with his daughter.
Very neat. That must have been very special for you. I just want to tell our listeners, if you are raising your hand, you enter a question in the Q&A box for the web users, and we'll get to that right away. Also, I guess you talk about the seven areas of life that are very important, activating mental genius being one of them. Certainty, success, fulfillment, social leadership. We don't have time to talk about all these interesting things, but pick one that's really jazzing you up at the present moment, and let's chat about that.
Well, you know, all of them. I'm a believer that if you want to master your life, any area of your life you don't empower is an area that somebody's going to overpower you, and it's going to curtail the mastery. So I don't see them as separate. Even though I use the terms, they're really intertwined and integrated. And so I always say that we have a spiritual mission, we have mental genius, we have vocational achievement, we have financial independence, we have family, love, and intimacy, social influence and leadership, and physical vitality and beauty. And all of them are ours, and they all deserve to be at the peak. And so what I do is I show people how to link all of them to your highest values so you have the greatest potential to activate them, and never to subordinate to people on the outside in any of those areas. Because that's the number one thing that stops people from living extraordinary lives, is subordination to outer authorities and having envy and ignorance. As Emerson said, envy is ignorance and imitation is suicide. We're not here to sit in the shadows of anyone. We're here to stand on the shoulders of giants.
Sounds fabulous. I love the idea. What do you do to keep yourself balanced and in check with your crazy travel schedule and always giving and doing for others? Where does the guru go?
Well, I'm not a guru. I don't like to use the term guru. I'm just a guy dedicated to teaching and researching every day. Every single day I research, every day I write, every day I pretty well teach, every day I pretty well travel. Those are the four highest priority things that I've learned to do. I learned from Mary Kay. I spoke for 4,500 people, women, at Mary Kay one time, and I went up to her and I asked her, what advice can you give a young aspiring speaker? And she said, every day write down the six or seven highest priority action steps I can do today to help me live an inspired life and do what I dream. So I did that, and after a while, after a couple of years of documenting those every single day on a little index card, I ended up looking at what was the highest priorities of the priorities. And I came to me, and it turned out to be research, write, travel, teach. So I then said, all right, I'm delegating everything else off my plate. So ever since then, it took me about 3 years to completely delegate everything. After that, I don't do anything now for all these years, 27 years now, but research, write, travel, teach. So I basically do that. As long as you're doing the highest priority things in day, you vitalize your energy. You can't wait to get up in the morning and do it. You don't drain yourself. You're designed to have more energy at the end of the day than when you start. And when you're doing what you love, that's what it is. If you're doing weighed down stuff and micromanaging and having to try to live somebody else's values, you're going against yourself. So it's prioritizing your actions, making sure they're congruent with who you really truly are and what you're inspired by, letting go of all the other stuff like a tree branches have to be let go to get to the sun, and give people, other people, opportunities to do what they do best that you hire. Surround yourself with people that want to do the things you want to delegate and get on with your mission.
So what do you advise for people who are trying to decide, we have more money, then we'll hire more people? You know, there's that kind of that back and forth of struggle. Do we invest the money in the people, or do we wait till we make more money to hire the people?
Well, listen, the word delegation is designed to make sure that you, if a person does this, you won't run into that problem. You make a list of everything you're doing in a day, everything. Then next to it, to the right of it, you write down how much does it produce for you per minute or per hour. And then next to that, how much time do you spend on it? And next to that is how much does it cost to hire somebody to do that that's absolutely top grade? And then how much meaning does it have? Because sometimes you do things that are a little bit more meaningful, but they don't produce them. And then you go in there and you look for the biggest spreads where you can actually go and get the most done for the most income and where you could delegate things and get the most spread. So you can extract surplus labor value out of people so they get a job and you get an opportunity. And in the process of doing that, you'll know exactly what to delegate. And if you're truly delegating, you're making more money than the cost. It never costs to truly wisely delegate. It only costs to foolishly try to find somebody who's not competent that you end up micromanaging and distracting yourself from what you're best to do. So you have to make sure that you know what you're delegating. It's clear. You hire people according to their values, making sure that the job description matches the values, and you get the people that are capable of doing it so you can be freed and not even be thinking about it. And focus on what you do best that makes more money. If you do, it will make you money, never cost you money.
Makes sense. Listen, I'm going to tap into Anthony, our tech guy. Anthony, he tells me there's a question from Suzanne, but I'm clicking the Q&A tab. This is a new seminar thing to me. So can you come on the call, Anthony, and let us know what the question from Suzanne is, please?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. At the GSS, you spoke a little about public speaking and sharing your message and living your values. Can you discuss the role of public speaking and researching your higher values?
Well, there's five S's of leadership. And the five S's of leadership is, one is knowing what your service is, which is your highest value. What is your service to this world? What do you feel your calling is? What do you feel is your destiny to bring to this world? You need to know what that is so you're clear about what that message is. The second thing is gaining specialized knowledge. That's the second S, or study. And you need to not be a fake. You need to be real. You can't bullshit people. You have to make sure that you know your material. And you want to be the best and the greatest and the expert in that field, and you study the hell out of that material until it's you. The third thing is you get up and speak. And you get up and speak and speak and speak, and you practice speaking, and you learn to play the flute by playing the flute. You get out there and speak and master the ability to speak. The only fear about people, you know, when I hear people say, I got a fear of speaking, they don't have a fear of speaking. They can speak to little kids anytime. They have a fear of speaking to people that they think have something they don't. And once they realize nobody has something they don't, if they know how to ask the right questions, they don't have a fear of that. But getting over the fear of speaking and getting out there and doing it and putting yourself in tough situations so you really push yourself to learn, this is important. Then learning how to sell and make sure that you're communicating in a way that people are intrigued by it so they want to buy. And then learning how to save to invest in yourself and pay yourself first. These are important. But speaking is essential. I mean, those with a mission have a message, and you have to get your message out there. And if you have a bigger desire to get the message out there than any obstacle, you get your message out there. So you have to be able to take the message that means the most to you, that you don't want to die leaving this planet and not get it out there, and get that message out there. That's what it's got to be, that driven. If it's not, you don't have a burning desire for it. So that's the key. And your highest value is that. So knowing your values. If a person goes to my website, they can go on my website, go down the left menu, and it has a little section called value determination. If they hit that button and hit another little button, how to determine your values, there's a free booklet download on how to determine your values. Finding out what that top one is and designing your programs around that will make a difference and catapult you faster.
Great plan. There's tons of information on the website, drdmartini.com. And again, if you're anywhere near the Toronto area, or it would be worth a flight as well, March 26th from Stressings to Blessings at the Park Hyatt. You can find it on his website, drdmartini.com. We are on the home stretch. I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your afternoon in South Africa. Would you like to leave us with any parting comments or thoughts for your fellow speakers, trainers, and educators?
Absolutely. We're not here to compare ourselves to other people, other than to help us see that whatever we think they have, we have in ourselves. As Schopenhauer says, we become our true self to the degree that we make everyone else ourself and realize nothing's missing in us. But we're not here to sit in the shadows of anyone or trying to inject values from other people into our life and try to mirror or be somebody we're not. We're here to be ourselves. The greatest thing to do is compare your daily actions to your highest values and what's most inspiring to you, and keep looking at what you're doing relative to what your dream is. If you do your highest priority actions every day towards your dream, you get your dream. And no matter what you've done or not done, you want to realize you're worthy of love. So don't sit there and judge yourself, because the only time you judge yourself is when you compare yourself to other people. Get on with your mission. You're going to have people liking you and disliking you. They're going to be considered a hero and a villain. Embrace your hero and villain, your saint, your sinner, your virtue and your vice. Embrace it all. You don't need to get rid of any part of yourself to be yourself. Get out there and get your message out there and give yourself permission to do something extraordinary. Because the truth is, you are extraordinary. Anything less than that's a lie. And so you give yourself permission to be the magnificent you that you're designed to be, and get your heart out there and get your message out there.
You know, I'm feeling your love, I'm feeling your brilliance, and I just want to thank you so much for spending your time with us today, Dr. DeMartini. Check out his website, drdmartini.com. Tell your fellow Captain NSA colleagues to listen to the webinar. Thank you so much, Anthony, for being our tech support and putting this online to enjoy. Tell your people to listen up. I've got pages of notes even while we were talking, so thank you so much. Do the work. Get on with your mission. Thank you for listening to the 2014 Grow Your Business, Grow Your Life. As usual, I'm Stephanie Staples, encouraging you to live your life unlimited. Hi, everybody.